Well, last time we finished our series, We Believe. And the last two messages, if you remember, were on heaven. And how do we describe heaven? Well, amongst other things, we spoke of heaven as coming home. God says, don't stand outside in the darkness. Come. Come to me. Come home. We look at the last few chapters of Revelation. There God describes heaven. Having described heaven, God then says to everyone, come home. Almost the last words to us in the Bible. God says, come. And the Spirit and the Bride say, come. And let him who hears say, come. And let him who thirsts, come. Whoever desires, let him take the water of life freely. Did you hear the warmth of God's invitation? Come. Did you hear the urgency of God's invitation? Three times he says, come, come, come. As though God is saying, I'm not taking no for an answer. And did you hear the generosity of his invitation? Whoever desires, let him take the water of life freely. Whoever you are. It's free, the water of life, free to all who will come. Did you hear the love in his invitation? God says, I'm ready to welcome you. I want you there. I want my home to be your home forever. If it's the last thing you hear, he says, it's an invitation to come home. So tonight we're going to think about a homecoming and a father who stands ready to welcome us. So please have the reading we had open in front of you, Luke chapter 15 and verses 11 to 32. It's become known as the parable of the lost son or the parable of the prodigal son. It's spoken by the Lord Jesus Christ. It's in answer to a complaint. Chapter 15, verse 2, the Pharisees and scribes complain, saying, this man, speaking of Jesus, receives, he welcomes sinners and eats with them. And so Jesus tells a parable to answer these religious people who are complaining that he's welcoming sinners to himself. And we have five things to say, 5 points. And point number one, a family divided. Verse 11, then he said, a certain man had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falls to me. So he divided to them his livelihood. Dad, I wish you were dead. But you're not. So give me my share of the inheritance now and in cash, please. It's a shameful request, isn't it? And to Jesus' Jewish hearers, it's a shameful response, verse 12. So he divided to them his livelihood. What's the father doing? What's he doing yielding to a son like this? This father has no honour. He should disinherit the son on the spot. But he doesn't. He gives him his share. Verse 13, and not many days after, the younger son gathered all together, journeyed to a far country. So the family breakdown is complete. He wishes his dad was dead, he rejects his love, and he moves as far away from his father as he possibly can. Oh, now without my father breathing down my neck, I can do what I like. And he does. There he wasted his possessions with prodigal or wasteful living. William Blake wrote, there are things that are known and things that are unknown, and in between are the doors. And in the 1960s, the poet and songwriter Jim Morrison took that phrase and named his group The Doors. And in the pursuit of personal freedom, Morrison tried to push against those doors, push those doors open between the known and the unknown. And he launched himself into an excess of every sort. But what I find interesting is this. When Jim Morrison was asked about his father was a US Admiral, he was alive and well. Morrison would say of his father, "My father is dead. I wish you were dead. A family divided." Well, here is another prodigal, says Jesus, pursuing his dreams of freedom, living as though his father is dead. Now, this is a parable, isn't it? It's an everyday story that opens a door on spiritual truth. So who is this son? Well, the answer is, this son is you and me. What are the words we never have to teach a child? Give me. Verse 12, Father, give me. This is a world of takers. More than that, I've initiated a family breakdown. I've left home. I've wished God was dead. I've rejected his love. I've moved from as far away from God as I possibly can. Because who wants God breathing down your neck? Do you? We live in the far country, says the Bible. We live at a distance from God. But God says, come home. So point number two. Wasted. Our young man gets wasted. Verse 13, and not many days after, the younger son gathered all together, journeyed to a far country, and there wasted his possessions with prodigal living. You see, when we leave home, when we leave God far behind, what do? We waste all that God has given to us. Now think about it. Everything that you have except your sin comes from God. So that's your life, your relationships, energy, time, gifts, opportunities, possessions, money. Everything that you have, save your sin, comes from God. It's all from him. But having left home, how do we spend those things that he's given to us? And there, wasted his possessions with prodigal living. We waste the lot, don't we? Jim Morrison's first single, Break On Through to the Other Side. It was used in Monsters, Inc. But did he break on through? Did he escape through those doors from the known to the unknown? How did he use his considerable gifts? He laid them to waste. And his great experiment in excess ended with his death in Paris in 1971 at the age of 27. The great, the mysterious, the dangerous Jim Morrison, he's just another rock casualty. But you see, that's how dreams always end. To leave home, to move far from God, what does it lead to? It leads to wasting everything. But it gets worse, doesn't it? Verse 14. But when he had spent all, there arose a severe famine in that land, and he began to be in want. Then he joined himself to a citizen. Sorry, then he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed pigs, swine. And he would have gladly filled his stomach with the pods that the swine ate, and no one gave him anything. When he dries up, friends do a runner, and now he's really in trouble, isn't he? The good times are over. They didn't last very long, did they? And now you see his choices are catching up with him. He began to be in want. He's having to do without. Jobs are scarce. There's a famine. If he's going to save himself, if he's going to survive, there's nothing left but to hire himself out. And of course he's no better than a slave. And now his humiliation is complete. Think of it, a Jewish lad feeding unclean pigs. In fact, things are so bad, he actually wants to eat the pig food in order to keep himself from starving. He's looking enviously at the pigs, filling their stomachs. And of course, to Jesus' Jewish hearers, the picture is shocking beyond words. What's the most shameful thing you can think of? Go on, have a good think. What's the most shameful thing that makes your stomach turn over and you're utterly disgusted by it? That's what they would have felt about this Jewish lad feeding pigs envying the food which the pigs are eating. So do you see, when I leave home, what do I find? When I break free from God's love, where do I end up? I end up in the pigsty, trying to be satisfied with rubbish. Are you starving? Do you feel empty? Well, what do you feed yourself on? Does it satisfy? Pornography? Shopping? TV? Drink? Fun? Music? But you're addicted to porn, aren't you? Precisely because it doesn't satisfy. And shopping, well, it cheers you up. But it's only ever for a time, and then you have to go shopping again. And television, well, actually, television's boring, isn't it? So corrosive, it's so dulling, it's boring. But at least when you're watching television, I suppose, you don't have to think. And drink? Well, you can't remember. And fun? You know, it's like when you're with your friends, you're having fun, but what do I have to do? I still have to try hard. I still worry what my friends really think about me. And what happens when the music's over? The moods return. I'm still angry and resentful and hurt, and relationships disappoint me and cause me pain, and I still have to go to work, or I still have to go to school. Don't you hate life in the far country? It's a wretched existence, isn't it? And like our lad, all our dreams of freedom. It's an illusion. It's a lie. It's not true. Then he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into his field to feed pigs. He's no better than a slave. That's what sin does to you. Sin doesn't give you choices. Sin gives you no choices. Jesus said, whoever commits sin is a slave to sin. Sin's never original or new or fresh or satisfying. Sin is never different. Sin is slavery, the monotony, the boredom of sin. It's banal. It's so dull. It's all the freedom of the pigsty, isn't it? What happens to you when you're in the pigsty? You look at yourself every now and again, you think, I am absolutely filthy. What's the question that you don't want me to ask you? We all feel shame, don't we? But God knows. God knows. You see, when you leave home, when you go far from God, when you find yourself in the far country, life is shameful, isn't it? We're emaciated, we're caked in filth, and we stink of the pigsty. We do, really, don't we? And it's worse than that. What does the Father say? For this my son was dead. The wages of sin, says the Bible, is death. It's not just ashes to ashes, dust to dust. It's the punishment of hell. And of course, there's no use looking for anyone to help you in the far country, because we're told, verse 16, no one gave him anything. In a world of takers, it's every man for himself, isn't it? So to leave home, to move far from God, to break free from his love is ultimately to lose everything. But God says, come home. So point number three, the way home. We've reached a turning point in the story. Do you talk to yourself? Well, maybe you ought to talk to yourself. Because our young man starts talking to himself, doesn't he? Look at verse 17. But when he came to himself, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have bread enough to eat, so I have bread enough to spare, and I perish with hunger. Do you see, he starts to think. So I was thinking to myself, I must have been mad leaving home. I'm worse off than one of my father's employees. What was I doing? And what am I going to do? Oh, I've blown it. Or have I? Verse 18. A thought strikes him. I will arise. I'll go to my father. I'll say to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants. I will arise. I'll go to my father. Father, I've wronged you. I've sinned. Forgive me. Look, forget that I was ever your son. I'm not even worthy to be called your son. But take me back as your slave, like one of your hired servants. And then I'll have the opportunity to pay you back for all the hurt I've caused you and for all the wrong that I've done. And the boy who once said, give me, now says to his father, or hopes to say to his father, make me like one of your hired servants. And he arose and came to his father. The way home. A friend of mine left home at the age of 18, went to live in Singapore. And she took with her the key to her parents' home. Why? What use was the key to her parents' home in Singapore, thousands of miles away? Well, perhaps it gave her the sense that, well, I can always come home. I'm in the far country, but I have the key to the door. Tonight, God warmly presses into your hand the key to his door. And he says to you, come home. So what's the way back? Did you notice it? Verse 17. But when he came to himself, he wakes up, he comes to himself. It's one of those moments where you suddenly see yourself and your situation and you recognize it for what it really is. And you've stopped living in the world of dreams and illusions and lies and you've woken up. Have you come to yourself? Have you thought, what am I doing in the far country? Here I am, I'm perishing. Why should I perish when in my father's house is everything I need? During the Second World War, on convoy duty were two Scottish sailors. And there they stood side by side on the rails, looking out over the vast grey wastes of the North Atlantic. And as they looked out, they talked together of home. In a moment, one of them was dead. He was cut through by an enemy shell. And in that moment, the other came to himself. His friend had passed from time into eternity. Eternity. An eternity for which he was not prepared. And the other realized it wasn't safe to be in the far country. There was but a step between him and hell. I thought, I perish. And it wasn't long before he came home to the Father. Have you come to yourself? And are you ready to tell God how it is? Verse 18, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. Yes, sin. To confess your sin, to go into the presence of God and name it for what it actually is. Name it in his presence. Confess it. And are you therefore ready to cast yourself on his mercy? Verse 19, I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Can you feel the key? Can you? It's coming to yourself. Realizing where I am. I'm in the far country. I'm in the pigsty. I'm perishing. Come to yourself. Feel that key. Feel it. Feel the lines. Can you feel it in your fingers? I must confess my sin. I've got to go to God and I've got to tell him what I've done. The person that I am. There needs to be some honesty between God and me. Yes, and I must cast myself upon his mercy. I'm not worthy. But have mercy upon me. Can you feel the key? God says to you, come home. But there's one last thing that's needed, isn't there? What's that? Verse 20. And he arose and came to his father. You might come to yourself. You might realize you've got to confess your sin. You might realize you've got to cast yourself upon his mercy. But I can do all those things and stay in the pigsty, can't I? What have I got to do? I've got to come to God. I've got to get up and go to him. Do you see, this lad comes to a point where he wants his father more than anything else. So he left the pigsty and he came home. It's what the Bible calls repentance. Do you desire God? Do you desire him more than anything else? And says, God, come home. I was chatting with a friend last week. And she asked, what's Sophie doing? I said, oh, Sophie's working at Superdrug. And she said, oh, awesome. No, Superdrug is not awesome. God is awesome. And surpassingly wonderful. And he's invincibly loving. Do you desire God? Do you want him more than anything else? And says, God, come home. So point number four, the welcoming God. Well, the son gets up, he starts for home. But will his plan work? What will his father say? What sort of reception can I expect? Well, Jesus here is now exactly the reception he can expect. He's hated his father. Gone with prostitutes. Ended up in the pigsty. In their eyes, he is the most shameful sinner imaginable. Oh, so they know they're waiting for this in the story. They know what's coming to him. His outraged father is going to publicly humiliate his son. He is going to beat him, and then he's going to disown him. That's what he deserves. They're waiting for it. So what does happen? Verse 20. He arose, came to his father, but when he was still a great way off, his father saw him, had compassion, and ran, and fell on his neck and kissed him. Did you hear that? Does his father disown him? No, he actually runs to meet him. And again, Jesus here is thinking, oh, the shame, the shame. Men of his age don't pull up their robes and sprint. It's a shameful thing for a father to do that. They don't embrace a pig, stinking sinner. But this father does, doesn't he? When he was still a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion, and he ran, fell on his neck, and kissed him. The son does no more than, as it were, come within reach. But as soon as his father sees him, you get the sense of you, the father's heart is in his mouth. He's overwhelmed with love for his son. And he runs with outstretched arms to meet him. My son, my son. And when they meet, he throws his arms around him and he hugs him and kisses him. And verse 21, the son doesn't even get to finish his little prepared speech before the father lavishes his love upon him. Oh, there's no need to prove yourself. I know you're sorry because you've come home. Instead of the father waiting for the son to honour him, he honours the son. It's extraordinary, isn't it? Verse 22, and the father said to his servants, bring out the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet, and bring the fatted calf here and kill it, and let us eat and be merry, for this my son was dead and is alive again. And he was lost and is found, and they began to be merry. Oh, it felt like a bereavement, but not today, for this my son was dead and is alive again. Do you see? The God of the Bible is the God who welcomes us home. That's who he is. He welcomes us home. Are you in the far country? Are you perishing? Are you in the pigsty? Oh, be honest. Come on, that's where you are. So what are you going to do? You say, well, I'm going to try and find a better job in the far country. All I need is a better partner. All I need is a better life. Or are you going to come home? God says, come. Come on. Come to me. Come home. He's looking for you. It's you he's speaking to. He's looking for you. He's waiting for you. He's longing for you. I may have left home. I may have rejected his love. I may have wished he was dead. I may have messed up big time. But God says, come home. And if you come, even when you're a great way off, even just silly or just within reach, he'll run to meet you with open arms. And he'll welcome you home. And your tears of repentance will turn to tears of joy. And no recriminations, your sins remembered no more. And the bounty of heaven will be lavished upon you. And best of all, to live as a son in the Father's house. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to be merry. Whoever you are, whatever you've done, God says, come home. Come home. That's the point number five. The other son. Now his older son was in the field. Who is his other son? Well, he's the rule-keeping Pharisees and scribes who are scandalized at the thought of a God who embraces sinners, a God who forgives the guilty, a God who welcomes people like this home. Because in their minds, what do you do with heaven? You have to earn heaven. How do you do that? Well, you go to church and you keep the rules. Fritz Sauckel, he was a Nazi. And after the war, he was convicted at the Nuremberg trials for crimes against humanity. This was the man responsible for working to death millions of slave laborers. But in his final months, through the influence and through an open Bible and through a man who was a Christ-loving U.S. Army chaplain, this Nazi, he left his sins and he came to Jesus Christ. One of the greatest sinners of the 20th century, he prayed at his bedside, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. And he who had shown no mercy found mercy. Has God gone soft? How can God run to embrace a Nazi guilty of such crimes? How can God embrace this pig stinking sinner? Maybe you haven't got a category for a God like that. That's the God that he is. He's the God of grace, the God of love. Are you outraged? Like that second son. But he was angry. This is the God who welcomes the guilty home. If he doesn't, there's no hope for any of us. We're all sinners. We're all in the pigsty. We're all hell bound. But if you're shocked by Fritz Sauckel, I'll tell you something even more shocking. It's the sinless Son of God, nailed to a cross, to suffer and bleed and die. When you look at him, what is he doing there? He is the one true innocent in the universe. And yet he is suffering unlike anyone who has ever lived. He's without sin. Yet he suffers for the sins of others. And that punishment which God's justice demands against the sinner, it falls upon Jesus. He receives the wages of sin. God doesn't spare his own son. So that prodigal children in the far country can be welcomed home tonight. How can we perish when there is such love in God? And Jesus says to you tonight, come. Come to me. Come home.